Hey everybody, welcome back to the Badgerland Birding Podcast, bringing you birding news and stories from the Badger State and beyond. Today we're with birder Ty Allen, who is out of Texas. Ty, how's it going today?
Good, how y'all?
Doing well. We just did a big day yesterday. So we were going from 4 a.m. until 12:30 the following day when we finally got home. So still recovering from that, I would say.
Understandable, understandable.
Do you have anything to add about the big day, Rye?
I'm still tired. I've been fumbling words all day, so a podcast might not go well. So if I start sputtering and mumbling, just like ignore it and just move on to the next thing.
Are you a big day guy, Ty?
Yes, I love doing all sorts of big days, breaking records, doing county big days. Yes, very much a lister.
What's your big day record?
I did one and hit 103 in my local county, but as for I don't know exactly my biggest for Texas as a whole though.
I feel like that the possibilities in Texas have to be huge because I think the
Oh yes.
record for Wisconsin's like 230. And based on the diversity of Texas, I feel like you have to have some massive big day totals.
We definitely do. I haven't looked into Texas as a whole record, but I know it's impressive.
You know, it might be kind of challenging though because it's so massive. So you like probably can't really go from one end to the other per se. So I don't know what your route would be. Just like going along the coast and continuously trying to pick up more coastal stuff, or maybe go to some area that has a lot of intermingling habitats. We did get over half of the record for the big day. So our total was over half of what the record is. So there,
Nice.
take that.
Very nice.
So it looks like on May 2nd, 2013, well, the North American Big Day record is 294 species set by Team
Wow.
Sapsucker. So that's, I mean, that's pretty wild.
Wonder where.
So it popped up when I searched Texas Big Day, but it may not have all been in what Uvalde. Is
Yeah, I know what that is. Down
that in
south.
Texas?
Yep, Uvalde is down south.
Yeah, so I don't know if all of it was in Texas, but at least part of
Gotcha. It would be hard to get out of Texas if you were doing a big day in
it.
Texas.
Yeah, I guess so.
You'd have to start on the periphery if you were going to do
Right.
that. I was
Exactly.
researching the Wisconsin one, and it was like they had been working on perfecting this route. So they had been doing it. I don't know if it was over a number of years or they just tried it different days in the like same year. But it sounded like it was very calculated. Like, we're not stopping for bathroom breaks. We're not stopping for food. It was very regimented in what it was. Ours was a little more chill. We like made the route the day before, so it wasn't very thought out. But I think we did a pretty good job.
It was kind of our first go at a big day that's not on the first of the year in winter. And they're kind of easier to figure out in winter because there's only so many things you can look for. There's probably only like 70 birds that are in the state at a given time that people are reporting in winter. And we ran into a problem where it was like, well, we could go get that, but that would take up, 2 hours, or they try and get this other thing. So I think we found like no rare birds. Nothing that we found was actually rare. It was all just stuff
Did the
that's
upland
expected.
sandpiper flag?
I think so, but it shouldn't have.
We saw whooping cranes though. So I mean
Oh,
that's always, yeah,
nice.
that's always a cool thing to see.
Got marked as sensitive, even though they're
Oh,
not really
yes.
rare for the area. We should talk a little bit about Ty though. I feel like you half introduced
Yeah.
him. Ty Allen's a guy that has a great mustache. He's a fantastic birder. Wants to be a guide professionally in the future. We met him in the Rio Grande Valley and he spotted a bunch of birds we were looking for. Ty Allen, everyone.
Hello.
That was the best intro he's going to get anywhere. So,
Appreciate it.
Ty, tell us a little bit about how you got into birding.
Yeah, so it's I always tell people it's a sort of a mystery.
That's how the story starts. It's sort of a mystery.
yeah,
Well, I
so
guess let's start with how old are you now?
I am 21. So I started birding around, I would say around 8. It's hard to nail down exactly when I started. When I was real young, I had a camera, some binoculars. Me and my older sister picked up an old guide, the bird guide we had, and just started birding around the yard. And it spiraled into an obsession from there. So,
What was kind of the first bird? Well, how old's your sister? Are you guys around the same age?
23 now, but
Is
she's
she
two years
still
older than me.
birding?
No.
No? So it only took to one of you long term.
Yeah, exactly. My younger brother's into birding now, and I always expected around the teens to get out of it, but I only got more interested in birding
That's how it
after
gets
that.
you. Pulls
Yeah,
you back
for sure.
in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was there a bird that really caught your interest, like a spark bird when you were starting out?
Yeah, not it's surprisingly not. I would say the bird that really got me more interested in it is the blue jay. So it was the first bird, like from a distance, based on the flight pattern, and it's like just a silhouette, realizing I could ID birds just like by the way they're flying. That's what hooked me, just the ID problems and figuring that out even without color and everything. So blue jay was, I always say, is my spark bird, because just is what got me really hooked.
Gotcha, very cool. I always feel like when you can kind of just see a bird, you know, the shape, and you kind of know what it is, it almost feels like you have superpowers. Or
Yes.
when you can identify a bird by call, you know, just hearing it and being like, oh, that's such and such. And especially if you're like, after a while, if you bird with newer people and you identify birds by ear, they're kind of like, how'd you do that? Or like, how do you get good at
Exactly.
that? Because I remember starting and people would do that. And I'd be like, man, how do they remember all this? Or how do they know all this? But it just kind of comes over time.
Sometimes still
Absolutely.
when they're like, oh, that's the chip note of this particular bird, or like that's the alternative chip note of this bird, you're like, oh, I don't know how you picked that one out, but I guess we'll roll with it.
Right.
So we've talked a little bit about the guiding. We have the, you know, some exciting news that I believe will have launched by the time the podcast is out, that we are starting a guiding network. So people always ask us, you know, if we do tours in different places, and we can't be everywhere, but we thought it'd be cool to be able to recommend people that we trust to, you know, offer some guiding as well. So Ty is going to be one of our guys, and you're kind of the Dallas area. And there's some cool stuff out by you, Ty. So can you tell us a little bit about like the tours that you're going to offer out in that area?
Yeah, absolutely. I have two that I started out with. I'll be able to create more as it goes further into it. But the first one I did is it's a place called Village Creek Drying Beds. It's one of the top hotspots in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, right actually in the Metroplex. Metroplex is in Arlington, situated right between Dallas and Fort Worth. And that one hotspot has a really nice, diverse amount of habitats. It has over 300 species of birds seen, over 300 species seen there alone. So it's just got lots of ponds, lots of different, got woodland. So it's just a really good place year round for the most part. Summer here can get really hot, but almost year round it's one of the best birding spots in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, with lots of ducks there during the winter. It's a good place in migration, find migratory birds and lots of different sparrows and stuff. So it's a really good area. Anytime you're in the Dallas Fort Worth area, that's a go-to spot. So that's the one. And then the other one is gets it's in the farther south of it's a little south of DFW, is Meridian State Park. So this you just the northern tip of where golden-cheeked warblers are. So they're range-restricted species, just found in pretty much central Texas. So this is at the northern tip of the range. So it's, but they're plentiful there. They breed there every year. So it's a really nice area. Gets into the Texas Hill Country feel, and so that's a place you can start to get a feel for Texas Hill Country. Really nice birding there as well.
What is Texas Hill Country in terms of the habitat? What does it look like? Is it just a
So,
bunch of rolling hills, or I'm having trouble picturing it because I've never actually been there before.
yeah, good point. Good point. So it is a hills, limestone. So like lots of, that's a really good question. The Texas Hill Country, lots of ash, juniper, like juniper, oak, live oaks, if you like a mixture of that, limestone ridges and stuff. It's unique, but I don't know exactly I would it, exactly what makes it that
Is
way.
it kind of like an
So the hill country?
yeah, hill country.
Is it kind of
Is
like
it?
an oak savanna vibe?
Yes, for sure.
So it's
A lot
kind
of
of
it.
like meadowy and sparse vegetation type deal.
I would say in a lot of the areas it's very much It can be meadowy, but it also gets really a lot of juniper trees mixed in with live oaks, and then it can be prairie and mixed in there with it.
It sounds interesting. It sounds different than any other place I've been in Texas.
Ty, is this, I pulled up, well, when you search it, is this what it looks like, kind of, where it's like,
yes,
with the
very,
meadow?
yes. Yeah, and it can be, yeah, that looks very similar to it. A lot of times it would be even more, like Meridian, for instance, State Park is even more dense. Yeah, there we go. And it has a nice lake in the middle. So smaller state park, but it's a
That
really
looks
beautiful
cool.
area.
That looks
that looks
beautiful.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Are all of those from that state park? Because I'm seeing a cave, I'm seeing overlooks.
The
Yeah,
cave
so
looks like it's there.
Yeah, it's, yep, that's right under the overlook. That picture is like that. It's it gives the illusion of being a cave, but it's just a real rock ledge. And so that overlook, there's like almost a cave underneath there. And there's canyon rims there sometimes, which is cool because it just gets into their range. So
that is cool.
This place looks absolutely delightful.
Yeah, and golden cheek warblers, especially if you do like early March, are just everywhere there.
Wow,
So
that's
it's a
cool.
fantastic place to go to get
Can
golden
you
cheek
get them
warbler.
there throughout their breeding times, or are they only there for, early spring?
Oh yeah, and you can definitely get them. They get a little bit trickier the further you go in, because then, I mean, when you go early on, they're really easy to get. But as you get further into nesting season and with the fledglings, it gets a little bit trickier. But they're definitely there in big enough numbers that they're you can get them until they leave, pretty much.
That's awesome. That's such a specific type of bird, I feel like, because there's not any other places really that you can get them, I think, other than Texas. And is it
Black cat vireo.
Black cat
Yes.
vireo there as well?
So black cat vireo have been reported in that region. They're not common at the park itself. The habitat there isn't ideal. I'm considering doing also a tour at the Dinosaur Valley State Park. It's just the county over from there, and it has both. But
Oh, cool.
logistics there are a little bit harder. So,
What
so
makes it
basically,
harder?
you're
The guy who knows where the black cap vireos and the golden cheek warblers are.
in each county. Yeah, I have a spot for them. So,
what makes that park harder logistically?
So there's all the trails are on the other side of the river. So the park is almost on a bend in the river. So the center of it is where all the headquarters are, where the park entrance is, but almost all the trails are on the other side of the river. And often it floods during spring rains, which is the time that they're easiest to get and most likely to see them. So it makes it hard to know day by day whether the trails are going to be open on the other side of the river. And then just the area where the whitecaps are is a little bit harder to get to. It's a good hike to get to them. So
that does sound logistically challenging, having the trails
yeah.
on the other side of the river. I feel like they
yeah it's,
build a bridge or something there.
Exactly. It would be very helpful if they had a bridge or something. But yeah, I have to check every time before I go there whether it's open or not. So
gotcha. See, that's such a good local insight to know, because people could look that up and just be like, oh, that's a good place to go, and then end up finding it closed or finding that they have to cross a river somehow. Like, there's always these places that they're not always what they seem when you just look it up.
That's very
Yeah.
true. Or you're like, oh, it's the state park where this bird is seen, and they're only actually seen in some small pocket of the park or something, or some specific habitat. We actually, one time when we were in Texas, before we knew the state really well at all, I think it was my first time in Texas, we went to some place to try and see some least grebes and found out by the time we got there, it was closed. You just never know with eBird reports and hotspots and things like that.
And
right.
I know in Arizona, like some of the canyon places, they're closed on random days. Like, so they'll be closed Tuesday, Wednesday. So you're in the midst of a trip, you're like, oh, I'm going to hit this canyon on Wednesday. And then you look it up and you're like, oh, they're closed on
Man,
these
what's
two random
Arizona
days.
doing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And with Dinosaur Valley, it's also a very popular area with having the dinosaur tracks there. It's very popular. So often it also will, the day will fill up. And so it does, that's another thing that adds to logistically making it difficult, is even sometimes you can't get a day pass unless you reserve it. So it's just a lot of more difficulty with that.
And then
location.
You get that day pass, and then it's a day when it rains or something, and the trails are closed. So
right,
I do
right.
think it would be cool just to see the dinosaur track. So I would probably go there even just for that. But if you can add a black-capped vireo and a golden cheek warbler, that's even better.
Right, for sure. It's an excellent area. So definitely would be a good place for people to visit. It just, I would have to need to work out some things with that one.
So now, since we're talking about Texas and the more central part of Texas, I have to ask about the Colima warbler. So what's the deal with the Colima warbler? There's only one spot to get it pretty much, isn't there? And it's a huge hike.
Yes. So up out in West Texas, Alpine and in the Big Bend National Park. So yes, it's got to hike up the mountain. It is a intense hike for sure. I mean, depending on
you've done it?
Yes, I have. I've done it twice. But yeah, it's worth it. And especially if you go to the springs up at the top, you can get the Blue Throated Mountain Gem up there. You get into that area where you can get Painted Red Star and some of those higher elevation species. So it's a hike, but it's definitely worth it.
Did you camp up there?
No.
So you
not
just
done
went
it
up
yet.
And then down same day?
Yes. Yep.
How long did that take you?
The majority of the day, we went up one way and then we went down a different way. But yeah, it's definitely a commitment.
And how good a shape do you need to be in for that? Like,
I
did you
mean,
have to do a bunch of push-ups before, the month before?
No, I mean, just regular birding. I was used to stuff similar to that. It definitely pushes limits if you haven't done anything like that, like 4 miles up, I think it is, something like that. And it's at certain areas, it's steeper. But I mean, there was one person with us that had never done any type of hiking and surprisingly made it all the way to the top. So I mean, so it's
throwing some
doable.
shade, she surprisingly made it.
Well, it's just like had done no hiking and was able to do all the way to the top.
So once you get up there, is it fairly easy to locate a Colima warbler, or is it still challenging?
In my experience, so I've having done only twice, I'm not definitely not the expert on that area, but the first time I went there, it was very windy, and so it was definitely harder to locate. But most of my experience comes from doing it in like June, which isn't ideal. So I imagine, just like with golden cheek warbler, if you were there when they first arrived, they'd be very easy once you get to the right elevation. But I know when I've been, it's been a little bit trickier to locate them. Because the times I've gone is just when I've helped out and also been a camper for Rio Diablo birding camp. So it's in June. So
would you say May would be the time to go?
May, or maybe even, I think I'd have to double check when they arrive, but like usually a little bit after they arrive in the region is the easiest time to get them, but I don't know the exact date. I haven't not
it's
that
something
much
that's
experience.
On our radar to go do at some point, the Kalima.
It's not on the
hike.
Radar, it's on the list.
There
it's
you
on
go.
The
I
list.
Mean we haven't set a date yet, so it's on the radar.
Right,
it's gonna happen.
Yeah,
I don't know
it's
when,
so worth it.
But it's gonna happen. Yeah, so tell me a little more. Well, first of all, did you guys go with a guide or did you all just kind of go as a group?
So the both the times I've gone up there, it was with Rio Diablo Birding Camp, which is done by birding with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. So I went as a camper the first year, and then I actually got to help out as a guide, not guiding, but helping out guiding for that the 2 years after that. So the first year I was a participant. The next time I went there, I was helping guide that. So
sweet. And that's the same camp Brian Koch runs or helps run, right?
He's the one that created that. So yes, that's definitely his project for sure.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about it. You had a really good experience with it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would recommend it to anybody. That, I mean, they get people for all from out of state. Like, and this next one's actually coming up real soon. They still have, I believe, places open for that. So it's, but anybody from 14 to 18, it's an incredible experience. It starts around the San Antonio area. I mean, depending on where people come from, but a lot of times with the airport, they have to do that, which is in Central Texas or Central South Texas, and goes all the way to Big Bend. So you hit lots of different areas. It really gives you a nice view of all the different Texas regions. So
yeah, it sounds awesome. How
it is
far
fun.
Is the like Big Bend area from where you are?
8 hours.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty far.
Within
yeah.
striking distance, though.
Europeans,
exactly.
I feel like that would just blow their mind. 8 hours and you're in the same state.
That is
Right.
True. You're not even going from one end to the other either. You're going from the middle to the western part. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, we first met you when you were doing some birding in the Rio Grande Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about your trip down there and what you were all able to see?
Yeah. So, we had 3 days we could make it down there, and it was when everything was showing up down there. So me, my younger brother, and a good friend of mine decided to drive down all overnight, and we had 2.5 days to birding there. So we started out, and first day we did the Santa Margarita Ranch with the guided tour there to get all the specialty stuff that was being seen there, the brown jays, the bare-throated tiger heron. Then we went back that evening for the mottled owl.
You got everything.
Yes, we were successful. At first, it seemed like we weren't going to get the bare-throated tiger heron, but we were finally able to find that bird.
Was there something? Oh, we got Muscovy duck when we were there as well. So we got a little bonus bird action.
So yeah, we missed that one. So that was one I was hoping to get that we missed, but I'll get it. But yeah, that the next day, then we went to, let me see if I can remember this accurately. We,
Oh,
yeah, the
Derek,
next
you
day.
have to pull up his eBird list and roast him like we do to everyone now, apparently. So,
oh, I haven't
not
heard of that
everyone. Last time we were at our friend Max on from Vermont, and we were looking at it where he had birded in the U.S., and there was a big hole in like the, what was it, the like central west part of the map.
Oh, yeah, you
Just
could
call him
definitely
out.
roast me on that. Up until
He's
only.
ready.
Ty, should we pull yours up?
Yeah, you should definitely do that.
All right.
You could definitely roast me on that because up until like the past couple of years, I haven't been able to do a lot of traveling. So mine is going to be a lot of gaps in the
Literally
states.
just Texas.
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much. A little bit. I had like when I was a little bit young, like, and I still in my teens, I went to California, but it was before I was a serious birder. So
that's a bummer when you go
I
somewhere
know.
before you're a serious birder.
Yeah, surprisingly, I still got a lot of the, and I went to San Diego, but still got some of the target species like Grin Tit, California Scrub Jay, California Thrasher. So for the small amount of species I got there, it was good.
That's cool.
Ty, do you have an NFC station?
I do a little bit. It's I'm dabbling
It's
in
on
that.
it's on eBird.
Yes, for sure.
That's pretty cool.
How do you have an NFC station just a little bit?
So it's just like they ask that when you're doing your recordings and you're uploading it, that you create a separate account to do that, because it's not, if you're not actually going outside and listening for it, if you're just adding audio that you recorded overnight, then it's not really your records. So
have
you
you
create
found
a separate
any
account.
Startling things?
Not too much. There's still some birds I'm really looking out for, but I've gotten some good county birds that way for sure.
That's
Like,
interesting.
yeah, least bittern. I've had a piping plover. So just some really birds that I could not have gotten easily in the county otherwise. So it's worth it, but just still getting into that.
So people that are unfamiliar, NFC is for nocturnal flight call. So it's basically like a thing you set up that records the birds calling overnight, and then you can, you know, figure out there's some cool species there you might have missed. How do you go about setting one of those up? Is it like a kit, like an NFC station kit, or is it like a homemade thing? And then do you have to go through all the data yourself, or does it kind of categorize it for you?
Yeah, so there's people that have gotten really good at it and have it all set up mostly automated where we clip out the different audios. When I've done it, one of the reasons I haven't done it more is I was doing a very minimal thing. I would put pretty much just a recorder and a 5 gallon bucket on the roof, and so that just helps it narrow down the and help amplify the sounds, and then just go through it at the peak times. So it was a lot of work, and so I haven't done a lot of most of the time nowadays. I'll just go out and listen with my ears and have a recorder going and just do the ones I hear, because otherwise I haven't gotten into doing a full-on setup yet. So but there is available.
Are you good enough at flight calls now that you can just pick stuff out by ear like that? Like if you hear piping plover flying over, you can pick it out?
Yes.
Whoa, Ty.
This is one of those moments we talked about where someone picks out the chip call and you're like, how'd you do that?
It's him.
I'm still getting like used to a lot of the different, like a lot of birds actually have unique flight calls that are, they just pretty much do just in flight or nocturnal flight calls. So still getting into the realm of that. But yeah, with some of the birds, it's the same as the regular calls. So some are easier than others to nail down.
That's cool. How is that something you study, like the piping plover flight call? Because I assume that's not something that's just like readily available to like quiz yourself on.
Yeah, so with that one, it wasn't too, that wasn't different from their regular call, the one it did. So it's just like with a lot of the shorebirds, it tends to be their call note or that they do in flight. Like upland sandpiper is a really distinct and commonly known one. So with that one and a lot of the shorebirds, it's very similar to the regular calls. So those with shorebirds, it's a little bit easier. With when it gets to some of the other birds, it's harder. And I would like, I'm just browsing through people that know what they're doing on in their NFC stations. Like there's some down at the coast, and so just going through those and listening through those audios on there and familiarizing myself with the species that I'm like don't know those calls by. So and there's a Facebook page that people can help out with. They'll help out with IDs that you don't know and stuff on that as well.
You must be an absolute menace in your county for people that are, you know, going, oh, Ty reported another upland sandpiper piping plover evening.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I don't do it as much lately, but yeah, it's definitely got me some good birds for the county.
Just picturing like standing outside and hearing an upland sandpiper slide whistle overhead is the most hilarious thing to think about.
We had an experience the other day where we were walking around at night and we just kept hearing call after call after call. And we actually had the thermal. So we were looking at the stuff flying over, so you could see everything dotting the sky flying over. It was pretty cool.
It was mostly American tree sparrows.
They were all leaving.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, with upland sandpiper, upland sandpiper and Dixis are like the two most common birds I hear whenever I do nocturnal flight call. Like they're constant in the right time through here, as well as Swainson's thrush.
Hmm.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
Those are not the ones I would have expected. Is the Dixisle flight call significantly different than the Dixisle regular song?
It's very different from the song, but like it's a very harsh call now. But it's very distinct. Once you start to hear it, it's very distinct and it's hard to miss. So
what about upland?
Very distinct on them. I would say probably one of the easiest nocturnal flight calls to get used to. It's just like in my region, it's like the most common and it's very easy to pick up once you know it.
So it's probably not the slide whistle though, like song?
Not the song, it's the call. I would butcher it if I tried to imitate it, but yeah, with the call note. Yeah.
Are there any that make their song as they go over, or is it always call? I guess I didn't put together NFC, you know, nocturnal flight call. Are there any that do like an actual song in flight?
The NFS.
Yeah.
Trying to think. I think there are some. I don't think it's very common though. There are some birds that do have flight songs. I'm not sure as in not how that relates to nocturnal flight calls, what how commonly they do it, but I wouldn't be the person to ask for that.
So I was going to say, you must live in a place where there's not a lot of noise pollution then to be able to actually hear that.
Less and less so. It's like very much DFW is growing south and north every which direction. And so we used to be very much more rural than we are, but now it's like everywhere around us is growing up. So it's getting harder to hear certain stuff, but it's still real enough.
Gotcha. All right, Ty. We need to talk about Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
So that was just a list entered at one point. I was just going to see my brother graduate. And so that was just when I was, I don't even know how old I was, like, I couldn't even guess. So it's a just entered from memory and from pictures. So it's terrible.
It's got one checklist and one county. You do yep. have some nice pictures in there, though.
Oh, there's terrible.
I don't know. This is a Hooded Merganser. Look
you got a nice yeah. reflection in that
It's
one,
got four out of five stars, Ty. You can't tell me it's a horrible picture.
What if you just rated it down in front of him?
It's a golden tree, right?
Yeah, this is gold. This was not Maryland, I'm assuming.
I was thinking, what's he doing with a golden tree? Did he keep it in his pocket for the flight and then let it go?
Right. Interesting. Yeah, that's in my home county, that golden cheek.
Wow, you did
a lot
of
look at that
different
line.
Counties in Texas though.
Yeah, I'm getting to where I'm slowly working towards the century club, which I've only recently been able to work towards, where it's like you try and get 100 species in 100 different Texas counties.
Wow.
So nowhere near doing that, but working towards it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy how many counties there are. It's funny how like here they're all different shape, then here they're just like box.
Yep.
Box.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a total of 254 counties.
Wow. Isn't there some state we looked at recently, Derek, that has five counties or something? It was just very few counties and they were all gerrymandered.
I know Delaware has like three.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Wow,
Sussex,
Delaware.
Kent, and then Newcastle.
You could do the Century Club three times there.
Are there 100 birds to see in each place? Probably,
yeah.
Probably with coastal.
Derek,
yeah,
show
sure.
me what's going on in Rhode Island real quick. I'm curious. I don't know if you can actually get it.
It's going to be hard.
No,
to, there you go.
There it is.
It's got more.
Four counties than Delaware. What's this nonsense? Man, all those islands would be difficult.
This island
Ooh,
off the south is interesting. But yeah, Ty, you're definitely the Texas expert. 459 species in Texas. That's like
impressive.
Yeah, that's a lot of species.
Yeah, thank you. I'm working towards it. It's still, I mean, as Texas goes, it's not all that impressive, but I appreciate it.
So you did some Louisiana birding?
Yep.
That's nice. New Mexico, Arizona, good. California. Yeah, Ty, you need to take a road trip, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I'm planning on going up into Minnesota beginning of next year sometime. So
Saxon Bog?
Probably, yeah.
Don't act like it's a secret.
I know, it's so classic.
We were talking about like the top five places to, you know, bird in the U.S. that like if someone was saying which five should I go to, and Saxon Bog is in our five because it's just such a cool place with species you can't really get anywhere else.
It's an iconic one.
For sure. For sure. Yep, definitely need to bird the northern US for sure.
Or really anywhere in the US almost, other than the Southwest.
Right? I had to point that out.
I said we're gonna roast it. I didn't say we're gonna gently point you in the right direction. It's a
Yeah, I
roast.
mean, there's a big gap even in Florida. It's just like, yeah, well, even California needs to be covered in much more than that. So, yep, I got a lot of traveling to do.
No,
Yeah,
that's true.
possibilities are endless, really.
And then
For
once you
sure.
get tired of that, you start going to other countries. Have you
Yeah.
been outside the US?
I am not yet.
You forgot to zoom way out on the eBird map and see the global. It would have been funny if tons of countries were checked off. Just
Right?
almost everywhere is checked off except for the United States.
Yeah, that would be
So
interesting.
what is the next bird that you really want to see?
Ooh. Oh, that's a difficult one.
The doozy.
For I don't know. I mean, I have I said on certain birds like for my Texas list because I've really been trying to work on that this year. So like in the Davis Mountains area, I'm really hoping to get Virginia's warbler. Trying to think of some other birds. I know there's some others, but on the spot I can't think of it.
Golden-cheeked warbler again.
Yeah, definitely no shortage of those. Like even yeah, Meridian. I went not that long ago, and there was like I got probably like 17 of them or so there. And
Dang, Ryan, we
it's
need to
not a
go
big
down
park.
there. I know. I want to go down there. It's just I've not thought about it that much because we go down to the Rio Grande Valley. I haven't thought about hill country so much. This is something I'm always thinking we'll get to at some point, but I'm never planning it. But now that we can stay at your house, we'll plan it.
Right.
You'd
Yeah,
be
you
like, this is the
should.
piping plover, nocturnal flight call.
Exactly. Yeah, I've for the longest time I just birded the yard, so my yard list is another thing I really like to work on, and I've been able to acquire a good yard list. So,
That's cool.
do you have like a water feature in it?
unfortunately, no. But I'm in a migration zone, so like there's it's just like perfect area. Like every year since I've noticed them, I've been able to whooping cranes migrate
Wow,
as they
wow.
migrates. Let me see, in
From your
November, so
yard?
yeah,
That's
over the yard.
crazy.
So have no body of water in the yard, but it's just I'm in a migratory zone, so
I bet
it's
if you put
cool.
in like a little water feature, you'd kill it.
Place would
Yeah,
just go bananas.
for sure. It definitely is an needed for the feature, but haven't gotten to that
Cool. Is there a next state that you really want to go? I mean, you're doing Minnesota, but other than that, is there a state that's really on your top list to go to?
I mean, it's a hard one because I'm like I really would like to go to Florida because there's a lot of birds, but at the same time, I would like it to be somewhere cooler. Like so like Minnesota, I'm looking forward to that because I do surprisingly like cooler weather, even though I'm born and raised in the South. So as much as I really would like to do Florida next, I think also I'd be very interested in doing like Maine or Washington, something like that. That's like especially in the summer. If I was to take a summer trip, I would really like to do Maine or Washington.
I think Maine would be cool. That's a place I want to go. But I also do want to go to Florida too, because I've never tried to bird the south part of Florida where all the crazy stuff is.
Right. Yeah. Definitely need to make it there.
Yeah, I think the like Key West dry tortugas, like that kind of stuff, I always see things about it and I just want to know what it's like. It
For
sounds
sure.
so cool.
Or you could just stay in Texas and continue to rack up new species that appear.
Exactly. There's plenty of exploring to do in Texas. Yeah. You can do it your whole life and still places you've never gone. So.
There's so many iconic species in Texas too. The first time we were there, we got crested Caracara and we got Roadrunner, and it was just, wow, this place is crazy. There's all this stuff here that I've seen on TV before, but never in real life.
Right. And yeah, the Caracara is an interesting one because they're really expanding their range. They used to be something you'd have to get like get in South Texas or along the coast, but like now they're year-round residents, even as far north as where I am, like in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they're year-round here now. So they're really moving north for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems that there are a nice set of birds that are moving around. Limpkin as well, expanding their range. You probably never even think about this, but Carolina Wren and Northern Mockingbird are expanding their range toward us up in the Midwest. So that's interesting. But
Yeah.
we're losing some of the birds that used to be here more regularly, like Canada Jay and evening grosbeak's not as common anymore. So it's a trade-off.
I'm not sure that's a good trade-off.
No,
I don't think so.
No, I know.
I wish
I
we had evening
wanna...
grosbeak like every year down as far as us.
We had a nice eruption year a few years ago, or was it last year? They actually got down to Milwaukee, but it seemed
no,
like
it was like
their
2 years
range
ago
is
or
going
something.
north.
Yeah, unfortunately, that does seem to be the case.
I'm sad now.
Well, we do got the Picard, so you know.
That's
Yeah,
true.
That's true.
We didn't even release that video yet. There's two videos.
There's
that
a
you're,
lot of Texas
there's
stuff
one that you're
that's
in and
still.
one that you're mentioned in.
Oh, interesting.
Because
Can you guess
you.
which one, which
Yeah.
the mentioned one is?
I actually can't. No. I mean, unless it was had to do. You already did the ranch one, so I couldn't guess which one it was mentioned in. So.
It's the Godwit.
Bartel Godwit.
Oh, gotcha. I didn't know there was one on that. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah,
after you
that
saw it, it
was.
was gone.
Yeah, that thing was a huge pain for us.
Oh, that one was a pain for me. I had tried for that one numerous times, and then I just took that exit, and it was right there. But that was my like fifth time trying for that bird over several months, even.
Oh, really?
So we
Yeah,
met
I
a
didn't know
couple, and it
that.
was like their seventh time. I mean, they finally got it, but it was, yeah, that's a lot. And it's,
There
but it's
was
funny
one
because the
guy,
first
though.
time, the
He
first
showed
time.
up. Oh, go ahead, Derek.
I was going to say the first time I was there was just in the soccer field and it was super easy because me and my friend went up, we got the Tyrant, and then we're like, let's just swing by and get the Godwit. And it was just in the soccer field. It took like a minute. Brian Koch was there too, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
There was a guy, though, when we were viewing it, and he literally did the thing where you show up seconds after it's gone. Because we had all viewed it and we were celebrating, and then all of a sudden the flock of all the Godwits took off, and then this other guy that was looking for it too pops up and he just goes, "Where is it?" And we were like, "Ooh, you
Oh
just
no.
missed it."
Yeah. Sadly happens in birding.
Do you
Hopefully
have
you
a
found
big
it.
miss that you remember?
Ooh. I mean, not one that I could. I've definitely dipped on plenty of birds, but not one that just immediately comes to mind, but it happens.
You should have made a mystique about yourself and just been like, "I've never dipped on a bird."
Right? Yeah. That would be good for a guide, you know,
Yeah,
like.
Tyon,
Never
he
miss
never dipped.
the bird.
Tell
Right.
us a little more about your desire to be a professional guide in the future.
Yeah, so I mean, I started out doing bird walks, so hosted by the store I work at. And around probably age 16, started doing those, really enjoyed those, but then trying to think when the exact first guiding thing I did was, but as I started doing more of those and getting more and more comfortable with doing that type of guiding, I really enjoyed those. But once I actually did, like, I don't know what would be the described difference of guiding a bird walk versus actually guiding, like, at a distinct place for a target species. But I always really enjoy doing guiding where it's like distinct targets and there's species we're looking for. Just helping people get their target birds and their goals. I really enjoy having a challenge. I mean, it's the more I've done it, the more I've loved it. And so it makes me happy getting people on the birds they want to get.
Yeah, there is like a, it's like a second joy seeing it through somebody else's eyes for the first time.
For
You know,
sure.
you're like, I already got to see it as a lifer watching them get so excited. You almost feel like it's has the same, it's like a lifer again for you almost.
A
Absolutely.
re-lifer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
a
it gives,
re-lifer.
right, exactly. And it gives you appreciation for birds that are very common, like people there was one group we were guiding, and they were from Utah, and it's like, so they were all excited to see the Northern Cardinal. And so like, that's a bird I see every day. It's like, I can't go a single day without getting that bird, but it gives you new appreciation for it, seeing it through other people's eyes that don't regularly see those birds. So definitely an enjoyable thing.
We were talking to a guide from the Rio Grande Valley the other day when we were at the biggest week in American Birding Festival. And we were talking about how so much of the stuff in the Rio Grande is actually really easy to find. And we were asking if she ever kind of puts a little more tension on it and says, I don't know if we're going to get that green jay. We're really going to have to grind for it just so that it's, you know, a little more exciting than when it pops up.
Yeah, that one makes sense. Yeah. In certain areas, I would say, yeah, the valley would be either a lot of areas of Texas, though. Some of those, especially with like the blackcap area and stuff, those can be tricky birds to actually get eyes on. The blackcap area is notoriously skulky.
Yeah, we got one in Oklahoma on Wichita Mountains, which
I
is,
love
you
that
know,
area.
the other place that you can get them other than Texas. But I mean, that was our first experience with it, so we were just hoping to see it. It wasn't a nemesis or anything, and luckily enough, one just kind of popped up and was out in the open for enough time to see it. But it's a very cool bird, really striking.
Yeah, definitely. And it's that I know I've been to the Wichita Mountains as well. That's a really interesting population that they like moved right up into that area. Those mountains are also very, very interesting geographically, because it's like all around there's prairie land and just open plains, and then these small, albeit small, mountains, but very interesting area of Oklahoma for sure.
Yeah, it was interesting. We really enjoyed our Oklahoma trip. And I think it's fun to go to states that people don't typically think of as really good birding or nature states, because there's so many hidden gems there. We went to Gloss Mountain there, went to Wichita Mountains. Just birding around Stillwater area is fun because the birds were sort of different. So there's a lot of cool stuff you can do that I think a lot of people don't even know about, but Wichita Mountains is one of them.
For sure. Yeah. I love that area. I'm actually going there like June for about a week to that area, so I'll be exploring those mountains a lot in
For any
June.
targets specifically, or just for fun?
Just for fun, yeah. So, but I'll be in that area like late June, so it won't be ideal, but it's very unique, and there's always stuff to explore in that area of Oklahoma. So,
yeah.
Cool. That's awesome. Do you find that any trip you take is automatically kind of turned into a birdcation?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's unavoidable.
Yeah, and even like now, any type of driving, like long road trips, if it's during the day, I'm looking for birds. Even just like county listing, you know, gotta
yeah,
get all the birds.
All right, Ty, I have I actually two like birding ethics questions for you. So when we were at McGee Marsh in Ohio, one of our friends said he got into a debate with somebody because he was looking at a water thrush's reflection. Like there was a water thrush on the water line and you could see the reflection of the bird. And he was asking, is that then countable? If you see a bird's reflection but don't actually see the bird, can you count it?
I mean, it always boils down to, I mean, your list, your rules. But I mean, with that one, I wouldn't want to count something like that. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, it's just like if it was in a like in a scope or something, that's one thing. But like if it wasn't just in a digital camera and that you were looking at somebody else's, I wouldn't even want to count necessarily it if I was seeing it on a digital screen, even if it was right out in front of me. So if it's not the actual bird, I wouldn't want to count it. But
Interesting.
Yeah,
I feel like
I
that's
wouldn't
very
judge people that
conservative.
did. So,
He's not fast and loose with lifeless. What's the problem?
I'm just saying. And then the other one is we were doing it with our big day yesterday. We were trying to get peregrine falcon at this power plant, and it was like the sun had gone down, but there was like some light, and we saw the nest box location on the power plant, right? So we're looking with binoculars slash scope into this nest box,
Abyss.
And you can see a darker mass where like the falcon's nest, like you can see something's on the nest. They have a Nestbox cam, so you can see. We can see on our phone the Falcon is sitting there on the nest, but in real life, we just see a darker mass that you're like, that's the Falcon.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still just a mass. Can you count? Would you count that?
I would definitely
Bingo.
Count that. Especially, yeah, I would definitely count that. Especially being knowing, especially having the ability to look and see that right there is the bird.
But part of me is like, what if it's delayed? What if this is actually the stream from yesterday they were showing us, and there's, you know, some other bird hanging out there?
Right.
It's like, it's so tough, those situations you can get.
I think
in.
We might be able to lighten it up enough on the computer that maybe we'll
see anything.
I mean, with that, it's a known location. And so if you saw something that was obviously not the nest and was like you convinced it was a bird, I would say it would be a safe bet.
I declare,
count, and
I
would
remember
count that.
Ryan going, I think I saw a wing move.
I did. Moved.
Yeah. I mean, if it's movement and it's on the nest, I mean, chances are that's it. So I would count that. So
there was another situation where we were waiting for a barn owl to come out of a hole in a barn, and there's a nest box cam on the barn owl, but we never saw it come out, and it was annoying because we just saw it in there and it would get up for a second and we would get excited and then it would just sit back down. And it never came out.
Yeah, then it just got too dark and it was like,
it's depressing.
Well, can't do it.
Interesting. Yeah. Nice to have a, you know, knowing, seeing the bird before. That's an interesting new way of having nest cam, knowing it's going to come out at some point.
We knew it was there. I was in proximity
to
the barn owl, which I still need as a lifer.
Well, that was frustrating because you're like, it's right there. You're like, I know it's right there, but I can't see it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So you said you wouldn't count seeing the bird on the back of a camera. That's interesting to me.
Well,
like
he means if somebody else's camera is on it and then you see it on the camera screen.
If it was like digital, like camera, like it's through scope, obviously. I mean, I would have to, I never exactly had that exact scenario, but I was just trying to think of something similar to just like seeing a reflection of a bird. But if it's like on somebody else's camera, they had it on the bird. I don't know whether, I mean, is it really seeing a video, like the live on the cameras, is that actually seeing it? I don't know. It's just, it would be an interesting thing I'd have to deal with there, but I wouldn't want to count it. I mean, you know.
So you're talking about like if you're standing next to someone, they have their camera on the bird and you like peek over and look.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an interesting dilemma for sure. I can't say for sure I wouldn't count it, but I really would not like that, getting a live bird that way.
Here's the classic one is, let's say there's a massive flock of birds and you take a bunch of pictures of them with your camera. You're looking through it, you're snapping photos, and then you look back later and there was a bird in there that you didn't see in the field, but it showed up on your pictures. Do you count it? It was in your eye line at some point.
This is a
you
new segment we do called Would You Count It?
That's
right,
a new
right.
segment we do that's called Get High in Trouble with the Birding Community.
Right. So with that one, it'd be, that's a difficult one because, I mean, and a part of it boils down to, like, I'm going to report anything that I know I saw on eBird. So even if I didn't, like, get great looks at it myself, and but I have photos, then obviously I should report it on eBird. So that's going to be on my list on there. And so some of it almost makes it easier just knowing that I need to put anything that I saw on eBird. So with that one, I would probably add it to eBird, but it would not be a satisfactory lifer.
That's fair. Yeah, you're doing citizen science.
But
you're
then
doing the Lord's work.
Couldn't you argue the same thing about the reflection bird, though? If you know it's there, but you didn't, you know,
I mean,
it?
I mean, that's one though. If you just saw the reflection, you didn't actually see the bird. Versus
it's,
if you saw the
there,
whole flock.
Right?
Yeah,
it's
I
there,
mean,
though,
it's there.
Right? Citizen
but,
science.
I mean, yeah. But
why are you
I
trying to change
know.
Ty's beliefs?
I'm not.
I mean,
I'm just putting information out there. He's steadfast.
Yeah.
I think
not it, changing on that. So.
I mean, he's right. It's your list, so you can really do whatever you want with it. It is interesting to talk about the eBird angle, though, because then I do think you would want to count the reflection one. Because, you know, you do know
give
that
give it
it's
to
there.
The NFC checklist. It's there.
You can put it on the
it's not mine, though.
Right, right.
It would be funny to have a bird that you really did not want on your life list, but it was rare or something, so you wanted other people to know it was there. So you know, email eBird and you go, "I don't want this on my list, but can you just put it out there for a while so the record counts? But I do not want it. Do not attach it to my life list."
Well, that's kind of the thing people say with sometimes reporting dead birds that they find. Because like, well, I know it was there, but I don't want it on my list.
Rest
but it existed.
To the Ross's goal. Yeah.
Yep. It's a lot of dilemmas in birding.
Well, it's kind of funny because in like, you know, the grand scheme of things, it's just, you know, do you count a bird or not kind of deal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there is a lot of kind of nuance to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like counting stuff for lifers. I'm a lot more rigid about what to count as a lifer or not. So when we were at Santa Margarita, I think someone heard a barn owl. And I didn't really specifically hear the barn owl, but it ended up on the list anyway. And I didn't want to get that as a lifer. You know, if it was something that was a whippoorwill or something that I've heard a lot of times, I would have probably been like, okay, I can stay on there. But the lifer, you have to be more rigid. I remember something that we ask everybody that we haven't asked you yet, though. So we do have a little bit of interest in paranormal, cryptid type stuff. You've been out in the field a lot. Have you ever had any weird experiences with anything paranormal or cryptid?
No, surprisingly not.
All right.
There's a Sasquatch in the corner that's just like, don't say it.
Yeah, I can't talk about it.
Well, he's never been to the PNW, so that's where a lot of the Sasquatch encounters take place, allegedly.
Pacific Northwest, he's talking about.
Yeah, it's too hot around here, so.
Way to rub in that he's never been anywhere other than Southwest again.
I'm just encouraging him to get out there.
You're like, he's never been to the Pacific Northwest, nor has he been to the East, nor has he been to the Northeast, nor has he been to the Midwest.
Yep, you got me on all cases.
Hey, he's got a lot of excitement in his future, though, to visit all those places.
That's true.
For sure.
And do you ever find yourself getting kind of jealous of beginner birders when you see, like, there's so many cool things like ahead of you that you're going to see for the first time?
A little bit. I mean, with me, I like, because I like listing, there's always something exciting. So like, even if it's just like for a new county, it's like, oh, it's a lifer for this county, or oh, it's a lifer for this, you know, hotspot. So for me, I can take a lot of joy in individual birds if they're new for certain areas and stuff. So I don't find usually myself being too envious of people with experiencing new birds, because I find ways to enjoy them through listing. So
yeah, we have a friend who says when he sees a bird that it's a lifer for this exact minute.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go.
Always keep it anew.
Yep. Lifer for the day, lifer for the hour.
For sure. Well, cool. Ty, we're excited to have you as part of the guiding network. And if you want to book Ty for a tour, you can go to badgerlandbirding.com, and then there's a tour section, and we have a little bio about Ty with some of the trips. And, you know, if people want to kind of customize that stuff, is that okay with you, Ty? But like, I want to do a little bit here, maybe do this, maybe try for like a certain other target species.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty much anywhere around the DFW area I could do. And yeah, more, even multiple locations. Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely flexible on that.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you. Anything else from you guys?
No. Happy to have
you. Appreciate the opportunity.
We're going to have to get some golden-cheeked warblers at some point.
Absolutely.
Is there like some good food spots out there, like Texas barbecue spots too?
Yes, for sure. I wouldn't be the person to ask about that, but definitely the food here is fantastic. So yes, that's all I can comment on. So,
all right, I think you're gonna have to get some clutch food locations that you can take tour guests to then.
Local cuisine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know of some spots that are already really good. So definitely, but that's a good point.
Awesome. Well, cool. Thanks so much, Ty, and thanks for everyone for watching this episode of the Badgerland Birding Podcast.